Chapter 38. The semi-gentle lope Bishop had taken on his way to the fusion package didn't work nearly as well now that he'd completed his task, and he was forced to downgrade to a brisk walk. So much for the UPP's goodwill gesture. The good had run out, leaving him to keep going by sheer will. He'd hoped he wouldn't have to stress his legs even more by climbing back up the elevator shaft, but he had scanned all the other possible escape routes from the fusion chamber, and he couldn't reach the lifeboats, any lifeboats, unless he retraced his wobbly, unstable steps. Every other route was impassable, either too damaged, blocked off, or overrun with aliens. When he finally made it to the elevators, he found the doors still shut, though not hot to the touch, which meant the fire was weaker than before and hadn't crept up the shaft. He could open the doors without getting fried by flashover. If he could open the doors, that was. Prying them apart by hand was out of the question. His legs weren't strong enough for leverage. He had to find the controls or camp out among the crates until the fusion package blew. Standing back, he enhanced his vision to survey the frame around the door, centimeter by centimeter, looking for the tiniest disruption in the surface. And there it was, at waist level on the right, a barely there seam in the metal that he'd overlooked earlier when he'd been more hurried. He tapped it lightly and it popped open, to reveal a lever with alternating black and danger yellow stripes. It was as stubborn as the one inside the shaft. He had to stand on a plastic crate and bear down with all his weight again to shift it from closed to open. This time the alarm didn't go off. As he slipped around the side of the doorway onto the ladder, he expected the doors to close again, but they didn't, most likely because the levers on both sides were now set to open. The fire at the bottom of the shaft had died down quite a bit. There was far less heat and smoke, although the stink of burning plastic, melting insulation, and scorched metal was still strong. Hanging by his arms to spare his legs for the moment, he looked up. The elevator car seemed to be miles away. Bishop took hold of the next rung up and carefully placed his foot sideways on the lower one to distribute his weight along its length. As humans always say at a time like this, "Here goes nothing," he thought, and slowly straightened his leg. There was a loud ripping noise, and suddenly he was hanging by his hands again. He felt his right leg bump against the ladder, but there was no feeling at all in his left, as if the whole thing had broken off, although he knew it hadn't. His weight was unchanged. Leading with his right leg, he swung himself back through the open doorway, hit the floor on his left side, and rolled over a couple of times without triggering the alarm again. Another lucky break, he supposed, although it didn't count for much next to the unlucky break. He sat up to assess the damage. His left leg was twisted and bent the wrong way, and still completely devoid of all sensation as he repositioned it. The artificial tibia had broken off at the knee, its jagged end ripping through the trouser material. There was no fibula. Either it had broken off completely, or it had never been there because the UPP didn't waste their resources giving robots silly frills. Apparently, a self-sealing circulatory system was another silly frill. Milky white fluid was seeping from his thigh onto the floor. But he hadn't lost very much. His upper body had detected the breach in physical integrity and shut down all the feeds to his left leg. Working quickly, he tied off all the exposed broken vessels at the jagged end of his thigh. He was doing the same to his lower leg when he discovered that despite the lack of sensation, not all the feeds to his central nervous system had been severed. After a moment of consideration, he decided to leave them intact. If he could find material for a splint and something to serve as a crutch, he might be able to keep himself mobile. Once he finished, he examined his tibia again, putting a careful fingertip to one of the jagged breaks. It crumbled under his touch. The UPP must have cut their polycarbon with baby powder. No, too wasteful. Cornstarch, perhaps. "Polycarbon," he said aloud, just to back up his neural net archive with more audio. Not that anyone would access it if he didn't make it off the station before it blew, and that was looking less likely by the second. Abruptly, he remembered something Hicks had said. "Hey, we win some, we lose some, the rest get rained out, but we always dress for the game."